Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we have a chat with three-time PGA Tour winner Scott Stallings and talk about another crazy finish in Hawaii.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast presented by Whoop. I'm Alex Myers. I'm joined in studio by Sam Wyman, Daniel Rappaport. Guys, good to have you here. We will get to our talk with Scott Stallings in a little bit. We will also have our gambling segment at the end, which we'll talk about the American Express this year, a.k.a. the old Bob Hope, Humana, all these, a lot of other names, right?
Yeah, there was Chrysler. No, there was a Chrysler championship.
Yeah,
at
maybe
point.
At one point.
Last year it had no name. Last year was just
no
a
name. The
classic.
No name. Yeah. The no name open.
So
yeah,
we're back with a sponsor.
Right. So we're back. So that's good news for the tour. Yeah. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, we want to start off with what happened last week, or really last night. Still, we had some more primetime golf and some primetime crazy golf in Hawaii at the Sony Open. A playoff. I'll start with you, Dan, because I know you came in today. You were pretty heated about what happened. We'll get to the winner, Cam Smith, in a second. But I know what Ryan Palmer did on that 18th hole. And again, there was a huge traffic jam on 18. It was not all his fault, to be clear. But he had some crazy thing go on, and you were not happy with what he did.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to take a provisional there. It's one of the first rules of tournament golf. If you're playing, especially on the last hole, especially if you're in front of right in front of the guy who's winning the tournament, mm-hmm. and you hit a shot that is, you know, we had the top tracer, so we could all see what he was seeing going so far right, heading for a screen, heading for an out-of-bounds fence. I just don't understand how you don't just throw one down as a basic courtesy to your playing competitors. You know, I wonder if it's sort of like an ego thing, like, oh, there's no way that's lost.
Right.
But, you know, there's no downside to hitting the provisional. But so he goes up there, doesn't find the ball, then comes back, obviously makes Steel wait a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. There was already wait, like you said. But also, I think something people haven't really been talking about is he hit his ball OB right. So that was the last thing Brennan Steel was thinking about when he hit his shot, because he probably didn't even notice there was OB right. You know, when you're on the tee and someone says, hey, don't go OB right here. You're like, wait, I didn't even see the OB right.
Right.
Like, why would you say that? So the last thing Steele thinks in his mind is OB right, probably, and then he hits this like high flippy hook way left. And I think we don't think that tour pros are prone to mental lapses like that. But if you're standing there for 30 minutes and the only thing that you're thinking about is there's OB right,
you're right. Mm-hmm. No, hang on. Just those two approach shots might have been 300 yards apart. I mean, it was.
Well, we don't know where the other one came.
Incredible, right? Or what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say is I fault him for not hitting a provisional because, like you said, there's no harm in doing it. It's an extra,
there's
an extra 10 seconds max. As far as the mental toll it took on the other players, that's the breaks. Like, you know, you're constantly playing in tournaments and in events where someone's hitting a shot and it's probably planting a seed in your head that you want to avoid. So that part, I think, is unreasonable to sort of fault him for that.
Yeah, no, just saying it might have had a factor.
Yeah, no, of course. But, you know, the other part is like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, these guys were playing. It was a critical moment, and he made them go through them through this entire wait for him before he finished. And at that point, you know, this is where golfers have to be selfish beings. You know, at that point, he's got to do what he needs to do, go through his process to try to win, because at that point he still had a chance. What was it? Remind me again. We talked about it a few weeks ago. The scenario at Valhalla – when they won at the PGA Championship,
2014.
When they wanted Phil to play up, correct?
No, they wanted Rory and Wiesberger, to play up
so they could finish.
So they could finish because they had Phil and them. They were already like halfway down the hole, and they were like, guys, just kind of pull over the side, let them hit their drives. Yeah, and they didn't all finish the hole together, but it saved a few minutes instead of them waiting on the tee for them to hit the second shot. They hit the shot first.
Right. My point is that, you know, golf is one of those weird moments where it's very much an individual sport, but your actions suddenly affect the timing of other people. And at some point, I don't fault, you know, whoever it is for doing what they need to do to get the ball in the hole as quickly as possible. I realize there's an etiquette involved. So 100% agree on Palmer not hitting provisional because I think it was just he just didn't think it through.
Right. Like probably also no one had lost a ball probably on that hole the whole week.
Well, I mean, he got a bad break too, let's be honest. And it was pretty crazy because, you know, we had just seen all these wild playoff games, but then you have this scenario and all of a sudden I flip to the golf and like I see Paul Tesori in, you know, surrounded by metal under the grant. I mean, they're looking in the backyards of people's houses for a golf ball. It was wild.
Your tweet was really funny because I was watching with my roommates who are not necessarily golf guys, but they live with me, so they're golf guys to a certain extent.
Right.
And so I turned it on and they were just like, what the hell is that? This is they're like, this is unwatchable. I'm watching guys like navigate scaffolding trying to find a ball. I don't, you know, compare that to the NFL action, and you wonder why golf sometimes has a hard time appealing to other sports fans.
Players like pretending to look for his ball, and they're not really. I mean, it was quite a mess. And you would think at a tour event you would never be able to lose a ball, but that's how crazy of a shot this was. Hit the scoreboard, and there's people's houses and this and that. So he did have to go back and re-hit, and that's what caused all this. But I will say, obviously, it wasn't just that. Like we said, there was a lot of rain. There was, you know, they were squeegeeing the greens. It took over 40 minutes for Brendan Steele to play that final hole. That's tough when you have a one-shot lead. That being said, Cam Smith, same situation with him, took over 40 minutes for him to play that hole. He hit a bad second shot. By the way, they both hit great drives after waiting for 15 minutes, so they were able to handle that. But they both hit terrible second shots. Cam Smith got up and down from that bunker to force the playoff. That's ultimately why he won. So he was able to kind of overcome it.
But you have to think that Cam Smith loved every minute that went on, because he knows that all Brendan Steele is thinking about is, I have the lead. You know, when you're the chaser in that scenario, the weight doesn't bother you. The weight helps you because you're thinking, every minute this goes longer, every second of this grows more tense is my advantage. But yeah, ton of respect for him getting that up and down. That left to right putt was probably 8 or 9 feet to force the win. He's got some moxie. Mm-hmm. I know we use that word a lot, but he really seems like he kind of has it. Yeah. We saw that in the President's Cup when he beat JT, who we had all crowned as you know, the best player, him and Tiger, at the President's Cup. And he's definitely a kind of guy, you know, sort of in the Poulter mode, where he's not going to wow you with his ball striking for sure. His ball striking stats, ever since he broke on tour, not very good.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a great short game, and he makes the putts when it matters. He's not a guy you want to be playing against like down the stretch come Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, you hate to see a guy lose a lead on the last hole. And Steele, by the way, had bogeyed 17 mm-hmm. missed a six-footer, and then he had to go through all this. So that's tough. It did save us from everybody in the world tweeted nerves of steel, this and that. So it did. But instead, Ryan Harrington, brilliant homepage. Did you see it?
Awesome.
Awesome. A-U-S-S-O-M-E. I used to do that, and I loved stupid crap like that, so I thought it was great. So at least we got awesome, but we didn't get nerves of steel. All right, from the craziest thing we saw to, I would say, the cutest and coolest thing we saw, and I know this caused a lot of hysteria on golf Twitter as well, both positive and then negative, people going crazy. Charlie Woods, Tiger Woods' son, has a great golf swing. That's a fact.
Fantastic
golf swing. Video emerged from a tournament. Tiger was with Charlie. He was caddying for him, from what we gathered, 2 days in a row, which is really cool. I think someone said Charlie finished second one day, but then someone said he was ninth.
Well, they posted his score, too. And
yeah.
What did he shoot?
It was in the 40s, you know, nine-hole.
Nine-hole. And again,
I don't know what the tees were. He's 10 years old. I don't know. He might have been playing really tough tees.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Tiger
like
was probably shooting 4 under par by the time he was 10 years old.
Well, this is part of it, right? You're inviting comparisons, which are probably not fair. So it's weird. Because,
I want to start with you because I said before, you have two sons who play golf, and you love sharing their swing.
And they both have the burden of following a great father. Like
multiple major champions. Yeah,
exactly. So that's where the comparison sort of ends. It's obviously completely different. I mean, in terms of – so there's two things. One is, his swing looks amazing, not just because it's really fluid, but if you look at – he's got that little using the ground for leverage like Tiger has. Like, he kind of comes down and comes out really nicely. Someone in our office like, well, if I had a golf course in my backyard, I'd have an amazing swing too. Nah.
Not necessarily.
This looked really good.
Yeah.
So I don't buy into that. Because that's the first part. Amazing swing. It's the type of thing that it's certainly conversation fodder, because you want to see what Tiger Woods' son is going to look like. However, we are talking about a 10-year-old kid who does not deserve to be scrutinized by any, you know, in any way at the level that his father has. So if it was just, look how cute Tiger Woods' son's golf swing is, or look how good it is, I think that would be fine.
Right.
It was in a public setting. It wasn't like, you know. That video appearing is fine. However, now we're talking about maybe the creation of some sort of expectations about what kind of golfer is he going to be, posting his score. That's where it gets a little weird. Now, granted, I didn't really think through any of that
Right.
When I first saw it, I was like, oh, look how amazing his swing is. It's, right. You know, really cool. Then you saw people who were really outraged by it because they felt like it was an invasion of privacy.
Well, that's the whole thing is I think we all feel this need to, like, morally opine on every single subject that we see. Mm-hmm. And kind of what Sam was saying, how it was just like, it was just a video of a kid with a really nice golf swing.
Right.
And I think all the, you know, there were a couple headlines or tweet captions that were like, this is proof that Tiger is, or that Charlie is the next Tiger, or Tiger's going to win.
Yeah.
You know, I think those are jokes.
That's what those are jokes. Tiger's going to win, Charlie's going to win 20 majors. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Those are jokes. And also it's just, we don't need to look deeper than necessary here.
Right.
And I think that there's this, especially on Twitter, there's this expectation that everyone needs to have a stance and a definitive stance. This is either right or this is wrong.
Right.
I don't even think that you need to view it on that plane. It was just an entertaining thing. And look, it's part of the business, right? If you're Tiger Woods and your kid plays golf, he's got to have attention.
Right.
Just like LeBron James's kid who plays basketball, and he has, these games are on ESPN.
Right.
And Kobe Bryant's daughter who plays basketball.
Right.
And Jack Nicklaus's son, Gary Nicklaus, was on
you
the cover.
You that old cover,
was on the
yeah.
cover of Sports Illustrated as a 16-year-old kid. Mm-hmm.
The oldest looking 16-year-old, I might add, maybe but ever.
This is nothing new.
Right.
But the argument can be made, and I agree with you, but the argument is that, first of all, 16 and 10, there's a big difference.
Okay.
So a 16-year-old kid who's entered the competitive arena, a little bit different. 10 years old is really young.
Yes.
Okay. And also, those choices were made by Tiger Woods. They were not made by Charlie Woods. Granted, again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here because I hadn't thought all this through until I started reading about it. But the argument can be made that this kid, like, he doesn't want this. He just wants to play golf. And, you know, it's a frustrating, difficult game.
I know,
as it
but
is.
Unfortunately, that's kind of, it's going to happen no matter what. And, you know, when Steffi Graf married Andre Agassi, everybody said, oh my God, their kids are going to be the greatest athletes of all time or whatever. And like, you know, that just, yeah, I mean, of course it's unfair, but it's just the way it's going to happen. I also, last quick thing, I will admit, if I were there, I saw Tiger with his kid, I would have taken a picture or a video. I would have done it. I'm sorry.
Do you think you would have tweeted it?
I probably would have. Now, again, the only thing that's making me say probably is all this backlash, because I would have thought everybody would have just been like, wow, that's really cool. The other part that I think is a little, you know, misleading, oh, someone was hiding in the bushes taking it. If someone went right up into his face and did it, that'd be even worse. So I know you could go up to a Tiger and ask him for permission, but of course that's not going to happen either. So I don't know. I just think it's a little much. All right. But before we get to Scott Stallings, I just want to say we need to talk about Pete Dye for a second, the legendary architect who passed away. Sam, I know you've gotten familiar with TPC, the stadium course.
Well,
TPC Sawgrass, are going to go there later this week.
Yeah, it was completely unplanned that it was going to obviously play the stadium course a few days after Pete Dye's passing. And but it feels now, you know, it feels like it has some more resonance. And I think it'll be cool to play it and kind of appreciate his creation and kind of his genius, if you will. You know, my only sort of, one-to-one exposure to Pete Dye was when his golf course opened in Pound Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the opening there and talking that through, and then also at Whistling Straits. And I remember, I very vividly remember him standing behind the green at Whistling Straits the first Thursday of the first PGA there, which was 2004, and sort of the pride he was taking seeing these guys struggle there. So I've never been personally, like, I don't love Pete Dye golf courses because I find them to be really challenging and stressful.
Right.
But that speaks to his genius as well. He makes golfers think in ways that they, you know, that they don't have to think most times they play.
Sure. Dan, do you have a favorite course or anything?
Yeah,
or
actually, I think the only one I've played is Whistling Straits.
Okay.
I haven't played the stadium course or anything. I just know growing up, he was the first designer I had ever heard of. Because he was the first designer, the only designer that the broadcast would ever talk about.
Mm.
And they would say, oh, this is a Pete Dye special here.
That's right.
And it opened my eyes to the whole world of golf course architecture. I didn't even, you know, you're not aware of those things as an 11-year-old, but when you keep hearing Pete Dye, Pete
you're
Dye,
right.
Pete Dye, that's when you look it up and you start to see.
That's true. That does speak to, I guess, his you know, originality, that he's the guy who gets brought up more than the other guys during telecast. I will say, I've played the stadium course. You know, it's great, obviously. The ocean course is actually, Kiowa, maybe my favorite course ever. We played it back-to-back days. It wasn't that windy, thank goodness.
Right, that's what everyone always says.
It's the toughest course.
40 miles an hour.
Ever,
yeah.
Right. And, you know, we paid a lot to play it, and we were like, you know what, we're going to do it again tomorrow. That's how good it was. I mean, it was just so spectacular. Whistling Straits, I've never gotten there. It looks like a similarly spectacular layout. But, yeah, the Ocean Course is great. And obviously, like you said, he left a mark that everyone's
Another thing about Pete Dye, and Ron Whitten, our Ron Whitten, wrote a really beautiful obituary about him, was that he didn't call himself a golf course designer or a golf cat. Golf course architect. He called himself a golf course builder, mm-hmm. which I thought was really cool. Is that there was no ego. There was no. He was very modest about what he did. He knew he didn't have the formal training of an architect and, or you know, the eye of a designer. But he built golf courses from the land that they were, that he was working with. He didn't. There was no pretension. You know, I'm a designer. Right. I'm an architect. He realized that what he was doing was cool, but it wasn't, you know, anything more than building golf courses and that kind of. Humility is always really refreshing to see from a legend like that.
Right. Well, RIP Pete Dye. Also, RIP Alice Dye, his wife. They worked together on so many of those great projects. Their legacy, though, obviously will last for a long time. All right. We want to talk to 3-time PGA Tour winner right now, Scott Stallings, about his fitness transformation, about you know, how he's getting in shape for this year. And, you know, I found out he's a fellow soda-holic like myself, so and how he kind of kicked that habit. So please have a listen to our chat with Scott Stallings.
Today's episode is brought to you by Whoop. It's 2020, and we're all looking for ways to improve our health and hit our own personal goals this year. Whether it's being smarter about how we train, making a better effort to get more sleep, or simply thinking more about our body's overall wellness. I know for myself, I'm all over the place. I work really hard. I coach my kids in sports. I try to work out a bit. And I'm always trying to maintain that balance between getting enough rest but also making sure I'm performing well. Today's sponsor, Whoop, is a fitness tracker that goes beyond counting steps and provides a 24/7 fitness, sleep, and recovery insights personalized to you. There's nothing else like it on the market. Our lives cause different levels of stress on our body, from training to work and our lives at home. Whoop understands that and quantifies it for you into actionable metrics. With Whoop, you'll get a daily recovery score that looks at biometrics like heart rate variability, resting heart rate, and your sleep performance to let you know how ready your body is to perform. You're also given insight into the intensity of your training in real time and tracks how strenuous your day is, as well as get next level sleep insight with suggested sleep times based on how strenuous your day is. Track your sleep stages and cycles and see how much sleep you got compared to how much you needed. Whether you're looking to be smarter about your fitness, better about your sleep, or be mindful of your body's recovery, Whoop has you covered. If you're looking to be smarter about how you train, sleep, or recover, Whoop is offering our audience a 15% off discount with the code GD15. Go to whoop.com, that's WHOOP.com, and use the code GD15 at checkout and optimize your performance with Whoop. Okay, joining us today is the founder and CEO of Whoop, Will Ahmed. Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the origins of Whoop and kind of where the idea came from.
Our mission at Whoop is really to unlock human performance. So broadly speaking, we believe every individual has an inner potential that you can tap into if you can better understand their bodies. And I got into this more from the athletic point of view, in that I was a college athlete. I was training while I was at Harvard. I was captain of the Harvard squash team. And I felt like I didn't know what I was doing to my body while I was training. Mm-hmm. I was someone who used to overtrain, and other athletes would get injured or undertrain or misinterpret fitness peaks. And so for me, it was doing a lot of physiology research around how can you better understand the human body.
Right. And so much of the Whoop metrics are based around your recovery and having your sort of optimal recovery. So maybe you can talk a little bit about what exactly that means.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the athlete or the everyday individual, there's a big focus on go, 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 do more. But how is your body actually recovering from all the stress and the strain that you're putting on it? And that's where sleep is a really big component. And then also understanding all these other concepts in your life, behaviors, diets, supplements. How do all these different things affect the way your body is responding to stress? And so Whoop every day provides a recovery score from 0 to 100%, red, yellow, green. How prepared is your body for the day? And if you've got an important day, you want that to be a high recovery.
Right. And it's worth noting that we have an interview today with Scott Stallings, and obviously a big part of our audience is people who want to play better golf. So as it relates to golf, explain how, you know, a strong recovery would equate to better golf.
Well, in general, I think golfers are putting a lot more stress and strain on their bodies than they realize. You know, golf isn't immediately thought of as the most strenuous sport relative to others, but actually the lifestyle of being a serious golfer is quite intense. You know, you've got hours and hours of practice, maybe you're exercising, you're traveling around the world. It's sometimes really early mornings or late nights. The schedules are somewhat inconsistent. All of those things dramatically impact your body's recovery. And what we've seen with a lot of the professional golfers that wear Whoop is they're able to figure out what are the right things for them to do in order to recover faster, in order to recover in an optimal way. And we've also seen that the individual golfers who have been winning all these tournaments wearing Whoop tend to have high recoveries on the weekend when they're playing. So it's not just optimizing for Thursday and Friday, but also thinking about how they can be optimal Saturday and Sunday if they need to close a tournament out.
Can you talk a little bit about heart rate variability and in lay terms what that exactly means?
So heart rate variability is the single most important thing that Whoop measures really accurately. We measure it in a similar capacity to an electrocardiogram, which is effectively medical equipment you'd find in a hospital. And heart rate variability is this lens into your autonomic nervous system. So ideally, you want your autonomic nervous system to be perfectly balanced. And if it's balanced, you in turn have a higher heart rate variability. And by being able to measure that, Whoop can tell whether or not someone's body is optimal and rested.
That's perfect. Well, this is really interesting stuff, and good luck with Whoop. Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Okay, happy to be joined today by Scott Stallings, who is about to make his 2020 PGA Tour debut at the American Express Championship. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, man, thank you guys for having me.
So really exciting. I mean, obviously, there's a lot to get into with you, but certainly one big storyline is your, you know, kind of transformation, your physical transformation, which has been covered a great deal over the last couple of years. You know, when you have some time off away from golf, what does that look like as opposed to when you're on tour regularly in terms of working out?
A little bit more volume, I guess. I kind of put the clubs down, and with the way that the season is now, we just don't have a time to schedule out a strength phase and recovery phase and everything. So you gotta kind of make do with what you have, and our tournament week training schedule is kind of like a microcosm of how you'd have a almost like a 12-month training cycle, lower bias, upper bias, metabolic conditioning, like recovery day. And then as the tournament goes into, it's all lighter, faster, shorter with respect to tee times and how much time you've been on the golf course, and trying to make sure it supports what you're trying to do while you're inside the ropes. But this off season, I built a house in June and built a big gym in my backyard, and we've got a bunch of great dudes that we train with, and baseball guys, MMA guys, just normal guys, like 9-to-5ers, and all really good friends of mine, and you know, we just got after it. All kinds of team workouts, individual workouts, and figuring out ways to push each other to be better. It was fun, but I'm definitely looking forward to be back on the road and kind of getting back into my training schedule with respect to golf.
Yeah, your workout space looks pretty cool. We were watching a video on it, dubbed the Barn. I like that. I'd like to think that if I had something like that so close, I would actually work out, but I probably still wouldn't. But I want to know, what really was the impetus for you to begin this transformation? I mean, obviously, in the latest issue of Golf Digest, we have a thing with you. We dub you, I think, the PGA Tour's most shredded player. What got you to get so into fitness where you've reached these levels?
Man, when I was going through the health stuff in around 2015, I just didn't feel good. I was trying to figure out what in the world was going on. Honestly, the gym was the only time of day that I really felt like my body was working the way that it was supposed to. And I made a bunch of comments in a bunch of different interviews, like that was kind of where I went, good, bad, or indifferent. And by no means was I in any kind of, shape. That's just kind of where I went to get away. And, you know, from just the, you know, sort of redundancy of what we do day in, day out, it was nice to go in there and try to figure out different ways to kind of push myself and, you know, figure out ways to, you know, kind of get out of my head a little bit. And as it kind of transpired, I kind of started to figure some things out and, you know, kind of be able to ask the questions to, you know, put myself in a better spot to take care of myself, recover better, train better. And just a little bit goes a long way. And but it all just kind of transpired out of that. Yeah. I had a major sinus surgery in 2015. Mm. Kind of corrected some sleep issues that I was having. And once that took place, like, I started seeing immediate differences in not only my body, but my training and just the way that I felt day in, day out. And, you know, that kind of all kind of, I don't know, transcended from there.
Yeah. Scott, am I right in saying that even though you're spending a lot of time in the gym, like, in terms of feeling better, there was a bit of a revelation when you found out that one of the recovery drinks you were drinking was actually, like, the worst thing for you? Talk a little bit about what happened there.
Yeah, you know, just throughout the process of figuring out, I found out I had obstructive sleep apnea, and that was the side of the surgery that kind of rectified, you know, just the ability to sleep and recover and everything. And I started doing some food allergy testing, and the doctor that did mine set me down, and I think in his mind he's about to have an intervention because, you know, some of these readings were off the charts. And he said, man, I just need to know, like, you know, this is, you can be honest with me. He said, man, how many beers do you drink a day? And I was like, what are you talking about, man? I said, I'm not a beer guy at all. Like, I said, at this point, I've had 10 beers in my life. And he's like, well, man, you have something in your diet that is basically killing you. And so I had to write down all these things I had. And I was drinking this protein recovery drink that had barley and sweet potato as the complex carb as far as the slow digestive part.
Mm-hmm.
And just a recovery protein drink. And I knew hundreds of people that took it. Like, nothing was wrong with it, but just the way that it reacted with me was almost had the negative effect. And, you know, my body was broken down and, you know, trying to use some nutrients to recover from training, it was basically doing the total opposite. It was, you know, just almost spiking my inflammatory marker in training, which is not what you're looking for.
Right.
You're trying to decrease the inflammation after training, and I was just building and building and building on top of it.
That's incredible. So when you kind of discover what it was, how quick before you suddenly saw a difference in how you felt?
Oh, man, almost instantaneous. I remember L.A. and so after sinus surgery, L.A. 2017, I remember going through and like a nutritionist guy, and me and my trainer, Adam, we went through like all these different grocery stores and just trying to learn how to read labels, trying to learn what was in the food was actually in the food, and not, you know, just learning just how the food companies and everything just kind of verbalize what's actually, you know, making up whatever the product is. Mm-hmm. And from that, you know, from protein to, you know, basically anything you come in contact every day, and just, you know, understanding like what you're truly looking at and as a process. And I have by no means done this by myself. I've had a countless amount of people come alongside me and help me out, and it's still a process, you know, still trying to figure out every single day, you know, how to become the best version of myself, and, you know, hopefully encourage others to try to make those same decisions.
I'm curious, because so much of your kind of, you know, identity on tour is about around your fitness and how well you take care of your body, how well you eat. You had a you know, a really strong start to your PGA Tour career, but maybe not in terms of how you're taking care of your body. Like, if you had to compare, like, what you were eating you know, your first couple years on tour and like what your workout regimen, like I'm curious, like what was the snapshot like then, and what is it, how dramatically different is it now?
Man, I had this conversation. We got a house in La Quinta with some of the guys, and one guy was asking me, like, man, like, I just want to know, like, what in the world were you, what was part of your day? And my biggest kind of, I guess, fault or whatever, what I struggled with was soda. I mean, any kind of carbonation, but particularly Dr. Pepper.
Alex is cringing because he's a Dr. Pepper guy. So,
man.
I mean, hopefully Alex doesn't drink near as many as I did, but I mean, no joke. I started my day with it. I ended my day with it. Mm-hmm. I was the guy that I could drink it. It was beside my bed when I woke up. It was beside my bed when I went to sleep. And, I mean, 10, 12 a day was not out of the norm.
Wow.
And I remember playing Colonial my rookie year, and they have these huge styrofoam cups, like 44 ounces, crushed ice and everything. It's 100 degrees. I'm getting ready to go play a tour event, and I fill one up to go to the range, and I fill it up again to go put on the putting green and then go play.
Wow. That's incredible. And, that's crazy.
I mean, I was by no means a picture of health in terms of the rest of my diet, but that was the thing that stood out the most. And, you know, you just don't realize, like, how much, while, you know, that 30 seconds of enjoyment, I mean, the detriment that that's throwing you in and the eight ball that's putting you behind it is just something that's becoming harder and harder to recover from.
Wow. I didn't realize I was talking to a fellow soda-holic here.
But he's recovered now.
You're recovered. Yeah, good for you. What,
yeah,
so,
hey, head down the path, man.
was it the regular stuff or diet or both? Or
no, man, hardcore.
Hardcore, yeah, wow, good for you.
No diet.
Yeah.
No diet at all.
I'm lucky. I'm a slow eater, drinker, so I don't do as much. But I, throughout the day, it's pretty consistent. So what, have you totally cut then soda out of the diet?
Yeah, I haven't had a soda or Dr. Pepper in maybe 3 or 4 years.
Wow. That's amazing. That's discipline.
So,
that's impressive.
I got introduced, a friend of mine introduced me to a company, Life Aid, beverage company out of Santa Cruz, and they have a product called Fit Aid, and the guy was like, man, you should try this. I think this would help get you off soda. And it 100% did. And fortunate enough to be able to do some work with them here in 2020 and kind of bring their brand to the golf market. But just almost like a authentic user kind of deal. That's 100% what got me off of soda. And I cannot honestly remember the last time I had one.
Wow. That's impressive. what Fit Aid? I got to look into that, I guess. I got to ask you, with all the fitness Sam's talking about, you know, obviously that is kind of what you've become known for on tour, but you tweeted out to Phil a picture of your calves. And to me and everybody else, we were like, damn, that's impressive. And Phil just wrote back, cute. And wonder what, have you talked with him about his calves and anything else? And I'm sure maybe there was more that went into that.
Oh, yes, man, I could completely care less about Phil's calves. and if that's his thing and that's what he's doing, I can honestly tell you that is not a typical training part or a focus of my training regimen.
Yeah.
And if that's something that he's doing, then that's great. But a bunch of guys have given us a bunch of hard times that we should have a calf off or whatever. But, I mean, there's a bunch of caddies and a bunch of other guys on tour that, I mean, blow us out of the water. So it's just that, you know, people see us a little bit more than they see them.
Well,
so,
you know, it is.
It's all in good fun.
Yeah, it is worth asking, you know, as you're going kind of through your fitness, you know, goals for the week and the year, how much of it is based around overall, you know, kind of just functional fitness, and how much of it is performance on the golf course, and how has that sort of evolved over time?
Yeah, a lot of it is depending on kind of what I'm trying to do, just on and off the golf course, and, you know, trying to find a happy medium of both. And it doesn't always work out their way. There's a little bit of trial and error. The timing aspect of it is very important to try to figure out exactly how to just maximize the potential of both. But I think after the last few years of really being, I've kind of got a routine down where I feel comfortable and feel like when my name's called on Thursday, I'm ready to go. But I'm also able to put the work in, you know, through the beginning part of the week and my off weeks to be able to, you know, make sure that my games continue to trending in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen any noticeable uptake in, like, swing speed or anything that you can kind of measure?
My back doesn't hurt every day.
Yeah.
And just the ability to handle the volume of what we do on the road. And I think that it is what we do for a living is a huge blessing and something that I have wanted to do since I was a kid. And I feel like I have the greatest job in the world and by no means take it for granted, but often what we do is fantasized about everyone just sees Thursdays through Sunday. No one sees the like the red eye that those guys just took from Hawaii to Palm Springs. No one sees that.
Right.
And, you know, they're changing 3-hour time zones, coming back on a short week on a 3-golf course tournament, and, you know, teeing up. It's like, man, that guy played great in Hawaii. Why did he shoot 74 with 5 bogeys on Thursday? It's like, man, the guy's still trying to work himself out of a hole. And people don't see that part. And the ability for me to be able to handle that better and almost, like, recover faster and, you know, kind of just deal with the, like I said earlier, the redundancy of what we do each week is made significantly more resilient to be able to handle that.
Yeah, and it sounds like everything. It's like you're saying, it's like it's not just, you know, it's handling travel, it's handling, you know, sleep deprivation. It's probably stress too. Like just feeling good physically probably allows you to endure stress a lot better than others.
Completely.
Yeah, I'm curious. You mentioned this is something you've wanted to do since you were a kid. I read this that you were a hardcore baseball player. I guess you were born in Massachusetts, played like a really competitive, you know, travel baseball schedule, and then Tiger won the Masters, and like within weeks you said, "I'm quitting baseball and I want to play golf."
No, that was within a day.
That's amazing. So, talk me through that.
The day. I was baseball is still my favorite. I enjoy watching it. Now I'm to the point in my career where I've become friends with, you know, multiple baseball guys. We actually train with a guy from the Cardinals and a guy from the Nationals at home, and just learn from them. And, you know, their lives are very similar. They have very long seasons. There's a lot that people don't see. And but if I say that I've wanted to play professional golf since I was a kid, I really wanted to go play for the Red Sox, but I soon realized that, you know, my passion and everything was kind of geared towards golf. But I enjoy being around it, and it'll be cool when we play in at Honda in West Palm. I'll be able to go and see some of those guys and, you know, kind of get a glimpse into what their spring training looks like, and you'll kind of see that, and they kind of compare it to ours.
Speaking of kids, I want to ask you about a really cool thing you do. Your Kids Play Free program, which I see you recently tweeted, you shared a tweet. In 2019, over 1,600 kids played 4,470 rounds of golf, I assume in the Nashville area, for free. And that is just such a cool thing. How did that get started? You know, tell us a little about that.
Yeah, so we started kind of like a pilot program in 2015, 2016, and basically trying to, you know, like, why is golf going away? Why are people playing less? Why? And time, cost, and availability are the biggest things, especially for juniors. And it takes a long time. The courses are not available for people in that age demographic, and it costs a lot of money, and it's hard. So there's just 4 negatives right before a kid even remotely tries to go play. And So, man, what do we need to do to encourage people to try to just get out there and just kind of dip their toe in there? And we can kind of help point them in the right direction as far as if they want to take it more than just this random, you know, three holes or five holes or nine holes or whatever they continue to try to play. And I said, you know, the excuse of all these, like, I want to get rid of all of them. So I partner with the Tennessee Golf Foundation, which I do a lot of stuff with them. I do my Junior Cup in Nashville. We started a Tennessee Junior Four Ball that's coming up this summer. And I try to do as much as I possibly can and to provide the opportunity that, you know, the state gave me. And, you know, they were a big part of helping me get to where I am today, and a great partner to come alongside with and be able to push the game and try to give back to the community that gave me an opportunity to do something I wouldn't have otherwise. And so we partnered with two executive courses, par three courses, and said, man, we're just going to figure it out, and raise a little bit of money and put it out there. And to be honest, it wasn't hugely successful. At the beginning, I didn't put my name on it. It was just kind of almost like, hey, let's see what happens. And in any situation like that, when you kind of throw it up against the wall and see what sticks, you figure out real fast what you need to do. And so the year before, we kind of rebranded it. The silhouette of the little golfer is my son from the Masters. And, you know, kind of we put my name on it and, you know, started pushing it out a little bit more, one event, and kind of tied it all together. And then it has escalated very quickly. And hopefully we'll have an opportunity in Knoxville to work with another golf course and kind of the next progression of where we're pushing it into the, you know, just giving kids more and more opportunities to play. We got our first I guess sister program in Murfreesboro. A businessman gave me a call one day and said, I saw your program. I want to bring that to Murfreesboro, and I would like to have the opportunity to keep it in the same, you know, kind of umbrella of yours, and asked if they could use my son's silhouette on their program. And, you know, hopefully it'll be something that in the next few years will kind of go statewide. And it's cool to go see. One of the courses is pretty close to my house in Knoxville, and you go out there on a nice Saturday morning, and you better bring a helmet. Balls are everywhere. But that was the idea of what we did. You bring your child, we'll give them balls, clubs, whatever, and just give them an opportunity to go out there and see if that's something they're interested in. And that could be pretty daunting as a parent, and something that, you know, especially taking a young child to any kind of golf environment that they've never done, and especially going out to seeing now where they have opportunity, where there's just as many kids that haven't done it as they have. Mm-hmm. And it's been pretty cool to see the response, and hopefully we'll continue to do more of those in the next coming years.
That's very cool. I want to ask you about kind of where your game is heading into the season, but before we do, another sort of headline associated with you, Scott, was your suspension from the tour a few years back. And the amazing thing about this is it was not you failing a drug test, but it was you reporting using a supplement, which was, I mean, from what I understand, so minuscule that the tour never would have been detected. I'm just curious about, like, that whole sequence of events, if you can talk about that and kind of what the takeaway for you was.
Yeah, I'm very happy to talk about it. It was a unique situation because I felt like at the end of the day, it was my fault. Before I say anything, that was my fault. I didn't do the due diligence. I fully trusted the words of a doctor. And, you know, when you're in the situation that I was in and a doctor tells you you can go buy something in a grocery store that was $10, I mean, you don't even hesitate. I went and took it immediately. Mm-hmm. Now I know what I know. And, you know, that was, you know, ignorance is not an excuse. And I was trying to make it one. And, you know, that was 100% my fault. The results that transpired after that, I would have liked to see them handled a little bit differently. And I've been very outspoken as far as just the subjectivity of just that whole process. Mm-hmm. At any time when in any program, when one person's discretion can circumvent any part of the policy, and basically it's just has the opportunity to be taken advantage of, mm-hmm. and it's going to be utilized to be what serves them at that moment. And hopefully they'll be continued to be looked into and kind of taken into the, you know, just where it's a little bit more black and white. But I understand every and all situations not. But ultimately, I was tested twice while I was on the product. I did one test with the tour. I did another test that was blood, hair, basically like a full Olympic blood test, and I passed them both. And just based on where I was physically and the product actually took itself, I mean, I would have never failed. In order to fail for what I took for, it had to be injected. It had to be pharmaceutical grade. Hmm. I don't think the, no offense to Kroger, but I don't think the Kroger brand of what I was taking was something that was going to be on a watch list. But at the end of the day, we played by a set of rules and standards, and I violated them. And I felt like that was something that, based on the integrity of what we do, as a professional golfer and as a man, I was going to take responsibility for that, and I was going to deal with whatever consequences came. And that's ultimately what happened. I called them and I said, hey, I found that this is on the list. I've taken it for roughly 30 days. You tested me here. I passed. I tested myself at the Mayo Clinic while I was on the product. Here are the results. And you guys can choose to see and do whatever you need to do. And I was honestly very shocked at the result and how it all happened, but that was the decision they made. And I feel like, in all honesty, there was a lot of pressure on them. There were so many holes poked in the policy just throughout the whole situation with VJ and a few other guys that were dealing with the tour. And golf was coming under the full WADA scale with going in the Olympics in Rio, and it was a great opportunity for them. It was a guy that was doing the right thing, whether or not he had to, right. And ultimately it was a perfect scenario because I wasn't going to lose my job because I was exempt.
Right. So was and, your go ahead, sorry.
No, that's it.
Well, it was, so was your sort of where you differed with it from the tour, is it the fact that you passed the test, like any test they gave you, you passed. So why are you being suspended at that point, even though you're the one that brought it forward?
Yeah. Well, number eight in the violations is basically admitted use of BAM substance irrelevant of a positive test. Okay. And, you know, there's been a few documented of guys, you know, saying of passing and saying they took things and this and that, but I kind of felt like, in a way, the situation was dealt with in a time and a place that probably could have been handled differently, because I felt like my situation only just poked more holes in the policy that was already riddled with holes. And, wait, we're suspending a guy even though that he passed? And I just felt like that all that did was raise more and more questions to something that already had multiple questions about it in the first place. And but I've had a lot of conversation with Jay. He's very open and honest with, you know, just trying to figure out how to make the tour as best as it possibly be. And him and I've had multiple conversations, and, you know, kind of be to spearhead some stuff moving forward and try to help all of us become better. There's some cool things coming in 2020 with the tour and health and fitness that are gonna that I'm very happy to be a part of, and, you know, try to push people to become the best version of themselves on and off the golf course, from professional golfers to fans and all the people who come in contact with on the road.
Well, yeah, just on a happier note, I just wanted to, you know, obviously you won your first PGA Tour title of three in 2011, but your real breakthrough, I read this earlier, came earlier that year at the Transitions. You finished third place, but it was an interesting note. You had your tour card, but you got a sponsor exemption, and you gave credit to Kenny Perry, who was a friend of yours, for getting you into that event. And that sort of jump-started your career. Can you just tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, Kenny and I had the same agent, and he was kind of like my big brother when I first got on tour, and he was sponsored by Transitions at the time, and he helped me get in, and man, he just, in the practice round on Tuesday, he kind of just let me have it, and when every time I get to the sixth fairway, Innisbrook, all I think about is laughing, because, I mean, he talked to me and just let me know all his thoughts and opinions on the state of my game. And it was all encouraging, but it was like, come on, man. Like, why are you playing so bad? And he asked me, I was in good position going into Sunday, asked me to go to dinner Saturday night, and which was funny because, oddly enough, later on in the year, on Saturday night of Greenbrier, I was playing my first ever final group, and he took me out to dinner again. So, I mean, he was a big part. You know, he's moved on to play the Champions Tour, but we still text and talk every now and then. And but that was a huge break in my career, and I would not have had it if it wasn't for him.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Listen, Scott, you've been really generous with your time. Really quickly, again, starting your season this week in Palm Springs, just overall your kind of goals for this year and how you feel like your game is heading into your first event.
Yeah, I feel good. I've enjoyed my off season. Kind of got away from the game for a little bit, but been back at it for a few weeks now. Kind of, you know, back into full routine, and look forward to being back. Play here in La Quinta, Torrey, and then Pebble in LA, and so a nice start. And then we'll play the whole Florida swing coming up. So quite a few events coming, and but this is what I love to do, and feel fortunate to be able to go out there and do it day in, day out. And excited for 10 years have gone by real fast.
Wow. Perfect.
So
awesome.
But I appreciate you guys having me on.
You got it. Scott Stallings, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks again to Scott Stallings for joining us. And now we move on to this week's PGA Tour event, in which Scott will be playing the American Express. It's a new name.
Amex.
Yeah, the Amex.
The Black Card.
The black
Card Open.
And to discuss that tournament and the odds and everything else going into it, we've got, once again, Steve Hennessy, Chris Powers joining me here. Guys, Steve, let me start with you first. Obviously, this is, you know, most golf fans probably still call this the Hope. Or maybe I don't know. Yeah. You have to be a certain age, I guess, to call it the Hope. But, right, it's the Hope.
Or a Hardo.
Yeah, or a Hardo, right. Then, you know, it was the Humana Challenge. Humana. And all this.
Desert Classic.
Right.
It was the Chrysler for a
Chrysler.
While.
Chrysler. Yeah. But anyway, I always think of it as just Palm Springs. But
yeah,
you fill everybody in on the course setup. Again, this also used to be the tournament that was five rounds.
That's right.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Until about 10 years ago. So Palm Springs, there's multiple courses going on.
Right. Yeah, three courses. You got the La Quinta Country Club Nicholas Tournament course and the PGA West Stadium course. That's where it'll be on Sunday. It's also Pete Dye course, so kind of fitting that the tour goes there after Mr. Dye's passing last week. So it'll be a three-course rotation for the first three rounds. And the other two courses, La Quinta Country Club and Nicholas Tournament course, played as the two easiest courses last year out of all 49 courses on the PGA Tour. So this is truly a birdie fest. I think the finishing score has not been below minus 20.
That's correct.
All but once since 1990.
Right. And since it went to the four rounds, it's been minus 20 or better every year.
So obviously the five courses play into that,
right,
you know, crazy low number, but still ultimate birdie fest. So, you know, bombing it definitely helps. I mean, this is a pro-am, so the rough on these courses are going to be really low. They got to get all these amateurs around the course. But you don't need to be a bomber here, because we've seen guys like Brian Gay win here. Mark Wilson, your boy Bill Haas, multiple-time winner.
Well, I mean, he's not a bomber, but he's short, the guy can move it.
He's not like one of the top 30 or 40 bombers on tour.
Probably not. come on, give my man some credit.
Right. Yeah. 150-1 this week.
I was going to bring him up.
And a little deeper, Charlie Hoffman won here in 2007. That was the only other time it was below 20 under. He's 250 to 1 this week.
Wow. Charlie Hoffman's 250 to 1?
Yeah, he hasn't played his best golf the last year or so.
That's amazing, though, to see him that low.
It is. And, you know, he's one of these veterans that they have a ton of experience here. Q School qualifying used to be here. That ended in 2012. So, you know, course experience doesn't necessarily, you know, mean that you're going to play well, but I think it definitely helps.
Yeah.
Speaking of Q School, our guy Brendan Todd in 2011 won it, and he's 40 to 1 this week.
Wow.
I like that. We might have to go back with the Todd father. I did make a little bet last week. I know you did too. He didn't come through. He was in the mix through a couple rounds. Yeah. I loved that the leading score after round two was, what, like 6 under? So anybody who was even under par, you felt like you had a good chance. Right. I know you had some live action. I got a little taste of Ted Potter as well. He was in the mix. I mean,
the wizard.
Look, I think it was worth it once the wind kicked up. And of course, obviously, as we talked about earlier in the show, the crazy finish there. So I guess, Chris, I'll start with you then. You know, Steve's mentioned a few names already, but who's really jumping out at you this week?
Honestly, I feel horrible after the Clemson LSU game last night. Yeah. But so I've been just looking at 10 different guys all morning, and I hate each one more than the last.
Trying to bounce back.
Yeah, but I'm gonna take a look at Ben On this week. He's at 28 to 1 on MGM. A little bit concerning. This is his first start here. I don't know. You know, do you need course experience? You're playing three different courses this week. But he's had 3 top eights in his last 6 starts. He bombs it, like we said. You know, you can be a bomber and win here. You don't have to be, but he hits it a long way. And over his last 50 rounds on per Fantasy National, he's second in total strokes gained tee to green, also second, and around the green. He's kind of in full control of his golf ball right now, except putting. But this is, you know, if you just get yourself enough looks in this event, I think you can still make a lot of birdies, even if you're not the best putter. Jason Duffner won here once, so.
That's enough said.
That's true.
Yeah, proximity is huge, and Ben On, his proximity stats are impressive. So,
by the way, Adam Long won last year.
Yep. Yeah, we should say that he was 400 to 1.
400 to 1.
At some spots, 500 to 1.
Right. So, you know, the Adam Long shot, when you think about guys, he beat Phil Mickelson. That was what's so great. Beat Phil Mickelson.
And Adam Hadwin, who had shot a 59 at the tournament before.
That's right. So, and he has 2 runner-ups here, Adam Hadwin. Also, looking at some of these previous winners, Patrick Reed, before he was Captain America and Mr. Bunkergate, whatever you want to call him, he was Mr. 63. This was where he opened up with 3 consecutive 63s.
Wow, that's right.
Then had to kind of hold on against Ryan Palmer on the final day, but he finished 28 under that week, so obviously he had a pretty good week. So, again, a lot of low scores. I'm surprised he's not playing this week because he usually plays basically everywhere.
He plays pretty much every week.
This is a place where he's won before, but no Patrick Reed. All right.
And same with Hadwin.
No Hadwin.
Not playing until waste event. Management.
Yeah. But 2-time winner Bill Haas is in the field.
We should call it the Bill Haas instead of the Bob.
It is. The Bill Haas.
Great
that's
guys
right.
in golf.
That's right. Yeah, that's he true. Could take over for, a great guy. For Bob. So Bill Haas, I might sprinkle a little on him at 150.
Top 10, 16 to 1, top 10.
On the flip side, the favorite is Ricky Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
He's 12 under. Wow, Chris laughing, is scoffing.
Just at the name of Ricky Fowler.
A mocking laugh. Ricky Fowler is the favorite. Steve, I know what Chris thinks. What do we think of that at 12 to 1?
I mean, it's low stress, right? So, you know, this is the type of tournament Ricky would do well at. Kapalua, he played well. He was in the mix till the weekend. He doesn't have a ton of experience here. But it is the kind of event you could see him doing well. But Chris made a good point off air earlier that, you know, he's prone to the double bogey and the bogey, and you can't really have those to.
You literally cannot bogey a single hole this week if you want to have a chance.
It's true.
So 12 to 1, I mean, you know, I don't hate that, but I'm going to go down to a little more value, I think, at 22 to 1 is Tony Finau.
Mm-hmm.
And. You know, he only has 1 tour win.
We say this every week. Yeah. But it really is crazy. Yeah.
And this field, like 22 to 1 for Tony Finau, feels a little low. So I'm going to back him. Par 5 scoring. There's 4 par 5s on each of these 3 courses. So you're going to get a ton of chances to score. That plays into his wheelhouse, and Bermuda grass is his best putting surface. And, you know, like we just said, proximity, you know, Finau could hit it tight, and he's not the best putter on tour, but, you know, give him enough chances on par fives. I like him at 22-1. I'm going to start my betting card with
that. That might be my bet this week, 22-1. Because, no, when you say it like that, you're right. I mean, I feel like at a typical PGA Tour event, Tony Finau would be at least 22, yeah, like 20-1, 25,
kind of
right?
Lives in that zone.
Mm-hmm. And this field is not great.
No, it's not the best. There's some good names, obviously.
Yeah, but, and the fact that it's a birdie fest like that, I think helps. Just quickly going through some of these names, a few jumped out at me other than Bill Haas. we mentioned Todd, who I'm seeing at MGM 40-1, but you've seen him as high as 55.
Yeah, 55 on
DraftKings. That's why it pays to have multiple accounts.
Right,
so,
40 on MGM.
Again, I don't have any accounts. I don't get my hands dirty.
It's for the best.
I let these guys do my dirty work for me.
you got to
live
have
in
guys.
Jersey.
Right.
You know, it's I can't, so I just want to make it, I'm not doing anything illegal here.
true.
Another guy who just jumped out at me, 300-1, and I'm just thinking of the number. I'm not necessarily thinking about the course. I know he doesn't have experience here. It's Christopher Ventura.
Yeah,
who
I saw that too.
Had a fantastic year on the web.com tour last year out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
He had no status even midway through that season. Ends up being one of the leading money winners. And then, you know, he's done okay in PGA Tour events. I mean, I guess the most notable thing he did was sort of maybe pretend to spit on Tony Romo's golf ball.
Oh, that's right.
At the Safeway.
Right.
That was kind of what. But no, I mean, this is a really talented player out of Oklahoma State, and you know, we're still in that stretch where you could see, you know, one of those first time winners type pop up, and 300-1. I mean, that's again, that just seems a little.
It's the type of week to, you know, bet those kind of.
I mean, Adam Long won last week. Right. Yeah, so exactly. It's like 300-1 now doesn't even seem that crazy when you have a Adam Long winning last year. So anyway, just throwing that out. Powers, any other thoughts on?
I'm going to look at Denny McCarthy, but not to win because I think he's the best putter in the world.
Wow!
Bold
statement. I mean,
best putter in the world.
don't listen to this Tiger.
Okay.
But
jeez.
Everywhere else, he's pretty I feel like if he could just have a modicum of success in every other area, he would probably win. So I might even bet on him to win this week, like you just said. Could be a first-time winner week. But I'll probably back it up with the top 10 and a top 20. Like you said, it's going to be a birdie fest. He's fifth in total birdies and eighth in birdie or better percentage. So I like McCarthy.
Stevie, Weekend at Denny's. Weekend at Denny's. I like that. That's a good one.
But yeah, and he's first in strokes gained putting on Bermuda.
He's the best putter in the world.
Like, best putter in the world.
Best putter in the world.
Best putter in the world. Wow, right better than Jason Day.
All these
Snedeker,
guys.
Denny McCarthy.
Okay.
Stricker. Also Strick in the field.
In the field. Oh, another guy popping out. We did mention as we were coming up here, Akshay Bhatia, obviously the recently turned pro. 17-year-old. He's still 17. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because he was going to turn pro when he turned 18. Now he ended up. This is his fifth sponsor exemption, so he's already almost burned through the seven that you're allowed for the year. Unfortunately, he has yet to make a cut. I was at the RSM Classic where he was inside the cut line on Friday. His coach, George Gankus, was caddying for him. He ended up backing up a little, of course, as soon as I went out to follow him. And he missed the cut there, but that day I think he was first in strokes gained approach. I mean, this guy can absolutely—he's a bomber. His iron game is incredible. It's the putting is needs some work.
He's no Denny McCarthy.
He's no Denny McCarthy, but
he can learn a thing.
He can crank it, and at this type of—I mean, honestly, this would be the type of course where he'll be hitting 17 greens a day,
right.
And it's just a matter of, you know, can he make a few. Putt. So
yeah, if he hits it close, I mean,
I like him to make the cut. If you could find a bet out there to make
he
the
got
cut,
three rounds to make the cut this week too.
That's right. Right. Three rounds to make
cut
the
after
perfect.
54 holes.
So if you could find a Akshay Bhatia cut bet, Steve, look into that. I kind of like that because I think he's due. I think he's too talented to not make a cut. I mean, you know, him turning pro was a little bit of a leap, but I don't think he would have done it if he and his coach didn't think he was capable of playing at this level. So I do think he's due and. You know, not to win, but make a cut. Steve, any other?
Yeah, a couple more guys. I like Andrew Putnam at 66-1. He's ranked 8th in strokes gained putting in this field, and he just feels a little undervalued. You know, he's like around top 50 in the world kind of guy at 66-1 in this field, right next to the best putter in the world, Denny McCarthy. He has made the cut the last 2 years here, 17th finish and a 34th. He hasn't played so great the last couple weeks this season, but kind of like him to get hot. He's one of these guys who could light it up. Same with Lucas Glover, also at 66-1. He has good course experience here, a couple top 15s, and his proximity stats are great. He's going to hit it tight. Not the best Bermuda putter. That's not his grass. But yeah, more of a bent grass guy, southern guy. But 66-1. Also, you know, he's been playing so well the last year. So like him, maybe a top 10 bet at 6-1, kind of like that, because he's finished around the top 10 like 3 or 4 times in the past here. And then I'll go one long shot, Henrik Norlander. He's 90-1, kind of popped a little last week at the Sony. There's some stat guys who have played the Sony and then this tournament back-to-back weeks have won like 11 in the past 12 times here. We saw that stat last week at the Sony, yeah. Guys playing Kapalua, and then Sony, that didn't come through.
But
still, yeah. a little still, corollary. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 90-1, Henrik Norlander, good putter, go low. So maybe a top 10 bet there too.
I like that. Yeah. I'm going to just do one more matchup. Sung J.M. is plus 120 over the favorite, Ricky Fowler.
Ooh.
I love these toss-up, you know, 50-50 matchup bets. Getting plus odds, and
yeah,
Sung J.M., you know, everybody's favorite player right now. Yeah. And like I said, you know, I'm Ricky's biggest fan, as much as it sounds like I'm not, but he's known for the big number, and a big number this week. You know, you're just putting yourself behind the eight ball. So I'll take him at plus 120. That's a full tournament.
I'm proud of you for not only not betting on Ricky to win.
That's
off
true.
To a good start, right? Right.
This is your lesson to
exactly.
us,
but
Professor Myers.
Also, you're betting against him,
right?
I mean, you're fading Fowler.
So now he'll probably
he'll light it up this week.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I'm probably now going to bet on it. But,
yeah, take Ricky to win this week only.
No, that's good to see. I have to mention, Chris. Sorry, but you did lose an all-time bet in another sport.
This is so good.
All time.
So that's why I'm not
guys, be
great.
Careful when you wade into the prop bets and player props. Chris had Ryan Tannehill for 13.5 yards rushing over. He got to 15 yards and then 2 kneel downs at the end of the game in victory formation. He lost by 0.5 yard. Is that your worst loss ever?
It's one of them. Yeah. And amazingly, I stayed away from the Vikings Niners game. Went for a run, no big deal.
No big deal.
Got a little exercise. I was like, I'm not gonna
do it
this weekend.
Oh yeah, 'cause you love Vikings.
Oh, I did. Yeah. Which, you know, thank God. Yeah. But I was like, I'll stay away from this first game. The night game is a big game. I'll sprinkle a little action here and there.
Right.
Of course, I landed on Tannehill over rushing yards. That's one of the worst ever.
Two kneel downs to end the game.
Because you did, Myers. We were texting or slacking or whatever, and.
I called it.
It didn't come to me, and then you were like, "Oh no, you could get killed," and it took me 3 seconds to think of what you're talking about,
right?
And then it came true
because sacks don't count,
right? Which is amazing.
Which in college
do. Yes,
that's why. Like I know there were all these prop bets last night with Burrow and Lawrence. Of course, they both went, I'm sure, way over. But I don't know because the sacks count against those.
You know.
Guys.
You know what's also funny? Going back to the Ohio State Clemson game, I bet on Dobbins over rushing yards, and when he hit it, the money went straight into my account.
Wow!
So I don't, you know, what if he had a negative 5 yard rush? I don't know.
Could have negative,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It didn't happen, so we don't know. But the money went right into my account. Like I was refreshing during the game.
It back out then?
I don't know.
Like, I feel like they can't do that.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah, maybe the the Tannehill was
the
karma.
What a book!
Yeah,
which book was that?
That was DraftKings.
DraftKings. Wow, very
love DraftKings.
Jersey.
But yeah, Tannehill's up there.
And
then having the Texans, you know.
Yeah, your teaser with the Texans. Oof. So you
tease the Texans to 15.5.
Right.
They're
up 24-0.
At 24-0, you're basically winning 40-0.
And you lost.
All that had
Stevie
to
and I were on the flip side.
Yeah.
So we're
which was the luckiest win of all time.
I might retire after that.
The NFL. Yeah, the NFL will get
NFL's
you.
Crazy.
Vegas. Just ask Vegas Dave. He knows.
Yeah.
Never loses 2 days in a row.
And then we got tonight, the Jeopardy GOAT continues.
Yes.
I mean, that, exciting. Have you been, they took down the odds on that, I think, most places, right? Because it was pre-aired and there was
word got out.
Yeah, there was a lot of fishy betting on someone.
Yeah.
I'm getting the more and more the feeling that the money was all coming in on Ken Jennings.
That.
Although, who knows? I mean, James could easily rip off a couple
in
a row.
If he wins tonight.
Yeah.
We need him to win tonight.
We need him
so
to win tonight just so
we
can see one
Wednesday.
More. Yeah.
I mean, if Brad just keeps hogging the daily doubles, he's screwed.
Yeah. I mean, Brad could win one, LOL. But
the banter on Twitter.
I honestly don't understand the Brad stuff either because he never lost and now he's getting killed every night. But anyway, we've got that to look forward to, obviously. The American Express this week, of course, the two big football games on Sunday.
Massive, massive game tomorrow night. Seton Hall versus Butler.
Oh, let's go.
Seton Hall Butler.
Number 5 in the country.
Butler ranked 5th in the country.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Hall in.
A lot going on.
All-time sports.
You got your picks here. I think my big $10 bet this week is going to be Tony Finau.
Nice.
Boom, talk you
we'll
into
see.
It.
Yeah, you talked me into it.
And we got to stick on The Godfather. I mean,
We do.
Yeah.
Ride or die.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just bet on him every week and at the end of the year figure out how much money I've lost.
Right. There you go.
No, he's going to win.
Some good
again.
Content.
Yeah, that would be funny. Yeah. All right. I'll think about it. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. It was fun. Thanks again to Scott Stallings for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our producer, Greg Gottfried, as always. And please check back next week to see who our guest is.